and everything she'd ever wanted. Selene fell immediately in love, despite keen awareness of the impossibility of their match. She could not be with him, not every day, not all day. Her time with him was limited, ephemeral. She sat up then, clutching the fabric to her, covering all the beautiful, secret parts of her, all the parts he would give everything to see. "Alec," she said, as though if she could stop the myth, she might be able to stop the course of their tale. He woke as she stood over him, and witnessing her unbearable beauty, fell instantly in love as well. But he could not bear to be without her, not even for a day, not even for a moment, not even for a breath. And so he begged the gods to grant him eternal sleep, so that he might never know what it was to live without her.
Alec lifted one hand, finally, lifting a long auburn curl from the place it draped over her shoulder, watching it slide through his fingers, tempting him with silken promise, making him want to bind his wrists in the stunning stuff and remain her prisoner forever.
It would take even the smallest part of her, if it meant having any of her at all, he said.
Her lips parted on a little intake of breath, and Alec ached to kiss her. What happened?
Zeus gave him his wish, and Endymion slept forever, ageless and deathless, and she came to him at night and watched over him with her beauty.
No, she said, her grey eyes suddenly glistening. They were never together. Alec's hand moved to her cheek, his thumb capturing the single tear that escaped before it could mar her perfect skin.
They were together for eternity, he answered,
the words coming low and thick with longing.
He dreamed forever, always of holding the moon in his arms.
Silence stretched between them, their gazes tangled, Alec willing himself to learn the lesson he was trying to give her, that love was not always happiness, that it was too often sorrow. And then she lifted her hand to his, holding his palm to her cheek. I don't wish to hold the moon in my arms, Alec, she whispered, grey eyes unwavering. I wish to hold you. She dropped the plaid, and it pulled at her hips, bearing her to him, all perfection in the golden candlelight. Alec followed the fabric, sinking to his knees at the side of the bed, desire rendering him unable to stand. He bowed his head and whispered her name, a sacrifice at her temple. She touched him gloriously, her fingers sliding into his hair. Alec, she whispered, please, please choose me. As though he could choose anything else. He lifted his head, reaching for her, taking her in hand, holding her steady.
Be certain, Lily, he whispered. Be certain you want me. I am coarse and unrefined, and I shall never be worthy of you. But I lack the strength to deny your will.
Her eyes went wide for a moment before she spoke, the words hot and clear as a sun. I am not a child. I know my mind. I know the consequences to my thoughts, to my actions. I know myself. I know what is to come. I wish it, Alec. If the words had not broken him, the movement would have, the way she leaned toward him, her lips a breath away from his. I will it. And he was hers, for one night, for eternity. Chapter 17 Diluted Duke, Damned by Desire. He kissed her like she was air, like she was all he'd ever wanted, like she was temptation and sin and he could not stop himself. And she revelled in it, running her hands through his hair, then down his shoulders and over his massive arms, aching for him to be closer, to be on the bed with her. She pulled back to tell him that, to beg him nearer, only to find him already watching her, brown eyes turned nearly black, lips stung with the kiss she had happily returned. "Alec," she whispered.
"Anything," he said. "I am yours."
"Mine." How long had she wanted this? How long had she ached for it? How many nights had she lain awake wishing that someone like this, strong and kind and heroic beyond measure, would find her, would claim her, would love her? She closed her eyes at the thought, knowing she asked for too much. He might not love her, but tonight, for as long as he was here with her, she could love him, and it might be enough. "Mine," she whispered. He watched her carefully, his gaze lingering over her face, as though he was trying to memorize her, and she did the same, taking in his strong, unbearable beauty and wishing his words true, forever.
"Yours," he whispered.
He made the word sound filthy, and she wanted it all the more. She shook her head. "But it is I who is wrapped in your colors." His gaze slid down over her bared breasts to the fabric pooled at her waist. He reached for it, his fingers running over it for the barest breath before he looked to her, brow furrowed.
"This isn't my plaid. It's a Stuart tartan, but it is too soft."
She nodded. "It is cashmere. The dressmaker gave it to me before I left this morning." She paused, not wanting to think of the dressmaker, of the reason she had been there. For a dress for the theatre. For a trousseau, not wanting to think of the other woman who had been there, his woman. Alec would not let her think of those things, however. His beautiful brown gaze captured her.
"You knew it would slay me."
Lily smiled. "I hoped it would." He pressed a kiss to her shoulder.
"Here," he whispered to the skin there. "This is what I saw when I entered the room. This shoulder bare and perfect against my plaid. And you."
His lips moved down, over her collarbone, down the slope of her breast.
"You, beautiful enough to be a Scottish queen."
He took the tip of her breast in his mouth, teasing until it was hard and begging for everything he would give her, for the licks and pulls at her flesh, even as she knew she should resist, knew she should be ashamed. But with Alec, nothing felt shameful, nothing felt wrong. It felt as though this moment, it was her purpose. He was her destiny. She cried out at the sensation and he gentled, worrying the straining flesh with a light graze of his teeth, making her pant his name and beg for more. He lifted his head.
"Is that how you like it, Mochria?"
She caressed his shoulders, her hand sliding up to cup his face to tilt him to her for a kiss. She whispered against his lips, "I like it however you wish to give it." He took control of the caress, sliding his tongue deep and claiming her for his own, marking her, ensuring that she would never be able to think of kissing without thinking of him, of now, of this night. He kissed her in long, lingering caresses, addling her mind with soft, sinful pleasure, until she nearly didn't notice that he had peeled away the tartan on her lap. And then his fingers were caressing, delving deeper in long, lingering strokes. And she noticed, clearly. She writhed beneath his touch, sighing her pleasure into his mouth.
"You taste of peppermint," he said after a long, lingering lick at her lips. "How is that possible?"
"Cecily," she sighed, desperate to find thought as his fingers played and tempted, making promises of what was to come. He raised a brow, humour in his gaze.
"Another Talbot trick."
"I wanted to taste good," she said, a blush running over her cheeks. He held her gaze for a long moment as he slid his fingers deep, and she gasped once, twice, before he removed them, bringing them to his mouth as he had in the carriage days ago. She blazed like the sun as she watched him slide them deep into his mouth as he tasted her secrets, the visual making her ache.
You taste wonderful. No peppermint required.
He leaned in again, licking along her jaw to her ear.
I should like to eat you up.
Her cheeks flamed at the words, and she thought she might perish from embarrassment when his fingers resumed their movement, dipping, swirling, and then disappearing again, rising to lazily paint the tip of one breast in slow, wet circles.
Shall I eat you up, lass?
Before she could answer, he moved again, sliding down her body, licking and sucking, until she sighed her pleasure and held him to her, aching for more. He repeated the action on the other breast, leaving her awash in need, aching for something she could not name. She lifted his face to hers. Alec, she whispered, squirming on the creaky bed. Please, come to me. He shook his head then.
I am not done tasting you, love.
Love. The endearment was enough to set her squirming again, even more so as he moved her, pulling her legs to the edge of the bed, and she closed her eyes, spreading her thighs wide.
Lie back, he said,
the words rough and deep and outrageous. She blinked. Aren't you going to
taste you, he said,
his massive hands sliding up her legs, over the soft skin of the inside of her thighs, setting her heart to pounding as his fingers moved higher and higher, until they were a wicked promise at the junction of her thighs. He stared at her for a long moment until she closed her eyes from the heat of his gaze. Finally, he pressed a kiss against the soft skin of one thigh and said,
You are perfect, Hare. Not that I should be surprised. Slick and wet and desperate for me, aren't you?
I don't know, she said, suddenly afraid of what he was about to do, of what he was about to make her feel. He growled at that.
You are the most perfect thing I've ever touched.
He pressed a kiss to the soft skin of her thigh.
You humble me with your body.
Unable to stop herself, she lifted herself to him, aching for his touch. It is yours, she whispered. All of me. I am yours. He growled at the words, turning to nip the inside of her knee before lifting her leg and settling it, shockingly, wonderfully, on his shoulder.
You have it wrong, love. It is not I who owns, but you.
He pressed a kiss to the curls that hid the heat of her.
Your lips taste like Scotland, he whispered at the core of her. But here, you taste like heaven.
And then he was kissing her in that glorious secret place, and she was gasping her shock and pleasure, and doing as she was told, lying back as he licked and sucked and revelled in her. She sighed his name, her hands moving to his head, fingers sliding into his hair. Alec, she whispered, I am yours, forever. The words seemed to unlock him, to make him wild and desperate and wicked and wonderful. A growl came deep, the vibration against her core making her just as wild, just as desperate. Her fingers clenched in his dark curls, and she did not hesitate to hold him to her, to move against him. His hand slid beneath her, lifting her, holding her to him like a banquet, and she cried out as he licked, finding all her secrets, giving her everything she'd ever desired. Yours, she whispered again and again, and finally, as he drove her higher and higher, he ripped the word from her on a wild, loud scream. He lifted his head at the sound, leaving her there on the precipice of something glorious. He pressed a soft kiss to her thigh, licking in little circles, until she looked to him, meeting his magnificent gaze as he stared up the length of her. You stopped. He did not move for a long moment, and then he leaned forward and blew a soft stream of air through her dark curls. She writhed, called to him.
How shall I prove it? He said lazily,
his gaze locked on the heart of her. Prove what?
'Tis I who is yours.
She did not have time for it. Alec, please. He licked the centre of her, long and lush and outrageously, and she cried out before he smiled, wide and beautiful, and said,
'Tis I who is yours, Mochria. What shall I do to prove it?
He laughed, low and deep and liquid against her.
There, tell me the thought that turned your whole body pink in the candlelight.
You know, she sighed, the words nearly a whine.
I do, he said,
as though they had all the time in the world.
But I wish you to command me, love. I wish you to be my goddess, and I your servant. I wish you to know your beauty, your pride, your perfection. I wish to honour it with every part of me.
His words set her aflame. It did not matter that they were mad. She looked to him, desperate for his mouth once more. Then do so. He raised a brow in question.
Say it.
He licked her again, and she went tight as a bow.
Honour me, Alec.
The words flooded her with pleasure. Honour me, Alec.
Worship me, Alec.
She closed her eyes. Worship me, Alec.
Kiss me, Alec.
Kiss me, Alec. And he did, driving her wild, making love to her with slow, savouring strokes, his hands lifting her to him like a feast. She pressed her hips to him, continuing the litany, repeating it again and again, until she found the precipice once more, and this time he did not stop, not even as she tumbled over the edge, his hands and mouth and tongue, the only discernible thing in the riot of pleasure. And as she clutched him and cried out the commands he had given her, she added another. Love me, Alec. Love me. And he did. In that moment, even if it never happened again, he loved her. She knew it. As she came down from her pleasure, she reached for him, pulling him to her, aching for more of him, for all of him. He came to her, climbing up over her, the bed, at once too small and also perfectly sized because it kept him close enough to touch, creaking at the movement. As he pushed her back and leaned down, pressing warm, wonderful kisses to her jaw, to her ear. Her hand reached for the hem of his kilt, finding warm, muscled skin there beneath the wool. She stroked up his long, muscled thigh, higher and higher, finding only warm, bare skin. She could not hide her shock. You wear nothing beneath. He lifted his head, meeting her gaze.
Nay.
Cecily wondered. He kissed her deep.
Cecily can find her own Scots to make the discovery. I am claimed.
Hers. The words emboldened her, and she tracked the bare skin to the front of him, to where he strained for her, hard and hot, and he hissed his pleasure at her touch.
Lily.
You are magnificent, she whispered.
I am too big, a beast.
She stroked him, long and lush. You are too perfect, a man. He closed his eyes and put his forehead to hers.
Thank you.
There was something in the words, an ache she did not like, a doubt she did not wish. She stilled. Alec? He shook his head.
Do not stop. Christ, Lily, do not stop.
She did not, stroking again and again, reveling in the size and strength of him. There is a small thing I should like to discuss. He hissed a laugh.
The word small is a bit unsettling when you are just there, lass.
She stroked him long and loving until he groaned his pleasure, the sound sending a similar feeling through her. I like that, she whispered.
I assure you, not half as much as I like it.
He stilled, then kissed her, stealing thought for a moment.
What is it you would like to discuss?
She had difficulty recalling. You remain clothed. His gaze found hers.
And?
It was her turn to kiss, to caress, to steal breath and thought, and finally to whisper. And I will you, not clothed. He closed his eyes.
I think I should not.
Are you mine? She whispered. Truly. They flew open.
Forever.
The word opened her up, brought the light in. Then prove it, Alec. Honour me. Worship me. Kiss me. This time she stopped at the last. He did not.
Love me, he whispered.
And she told the truth. I do. He closed his eyes again, and she saw the pain flash over his features, as though the words had been a curse instead of a gift. Doubt flared deep inside her. I am sorry, she whispered, summoning his gaze to her with her own fear. I cannot stop the truth. I love you. He did not reply, except to move, giving her precisely what she wanted. He stood up, shed his clothes, revealing his magnificence, the hard expanse of his chest and the tight, rippling muscles of his stomach, ending in a remarkable cut of flesh above his hips, angling down to the part of him that appeared to ache for her as much as she ached for him. He returned to her, the bed creaking beneath his weight as she reached for him, her legs opening as he moved between them, coming down over her, his arms holding his weight off her, his sighs protecting her.
Never apologize for that. I shall treasure it. Forever. Even when you discover how unworthy I am of it.
Her brow furrowed, but she was unable to ask him to explain it, because he was kissing her, stroking her, guiding her, protecting her. He slid into her in a perfect, glorious movement, making her sigh and gasp and cling to him as he moved in a perfect rhythm, watching her responses, finding the places she most desired him, giving her everything she wanted, and eventually, once he found their rhythm, rocking against her. Pressing and rolling and driving her higher and higher, until she was crying his name and clinging to him, begging him with words she should never have used. Harder, faster, deeper. And he gave it to her without question, without quarter.
Open your eyes, Lily, he whispered,
his lips at her ear, his tongue stroking there and making her mad with desire. She did, and he watched her, lids heavy with desire.
Don't stop looking at me, love.
Never, she whispered. I will never stop.
I need you, he replied. I need this. I don't know how I will live without it.
Never. You will never have to, she whispered. I love you. He kissed her again, and she realized that he'd stolen more than her heart, more than her breath. He'd taken away her shame. She was his. And in that knowledge she found herself. She found her strength, and it was glorious. They careened toward pleasure together, hard and fast, and finally, finally there, like heaven had opened up and spilled down upon them, pleasure coursing through them, their names on each other's lips, the ground falling away. No, not the ground, the bed. One thin leg had collapsed beneath their combined weight, beneath the force of their pleasure, and the whole thing tipped, sending them sliding off. Lily letting out a little shriek as Alec turned to bear the brunt of the fall, clutching her to him as he landed hard on the floor with a deep grunt. A moment passed while Lily attempted to take stock of the situation. One moment on the bed in the most magnificent experience of her life, and the next, spread across Alec's chest on the floor of the bedchamber. Just as she came to terms with the event, a crack sounded, and Alec cursed, immediately turning them, putting her back to the floor and covering her with his body as the canopy came down with a mighty crash atop them, a large piece of wood striking him across the shoulders and knocking the nearby table, from which a porcelain squirrel, complete with teacup, smashed to the ground. Remarkably, it was only then that the dogs barked. Lily began to laugh. She had never in her life been so happy as she was in that cacophonous disaster of a room, where she finally, finally felt whole, naked and cold and on the floor, in the protective embrace of the man she loved. Not ashamed, not used, not at all lonely, for the first time in forever. Relief and joy and emotion drove the laughter for long minutes, until Alec moved off her, lifting the canopy from where it had fallen and sitting up, and she realized that she was alone in her amusement, that Alec, instead, was stone-faced. She stopped laughing and sat up immediately. Alec?
This was a mistake.
Cold dread threaded through her, but she did her best to ignore it, to pretend it was something else. Well, it might be best if we stock sturdier furniture, if we are to have such lovely...
Not the bed.
She did not pretend to misunderstand. She shook her head. It wasn't a mistake. It could not have been. Nothing that felt so perfect, so right, could be a mistake. He was not a mistake. But she... Doubt whispered as he turned away, putting his wide, muscled back to her. He did not look back when he said,
I assure you, it was.
He stood, magnificent and muscled like a Greek god. And she recalled the story he'd told, suddenly understanding why Endymion might choose endless dreams of his love over the possibility of losing her for even a moment. If given the choice, Lily would sleep now, forever, if it meant having a taste of him.
We shall have to marry.
The words came so softly that she nearly didn't hear them, or rather nearly didn't believe he'd said them. There had never been words she'd wished to hear more, and yet they destroyed her. The emotion in them, keen, clear regret, was undeniable. Shall have to, as though it would be a trial, as though he did not wish it. Of course he wouldn't wish it. She was a public scandal, and he a duke. She reached for the plaid she'd been wearing, extracting it from beneath the fallen canopy, wrapping herself in it, wanting to shield herself from the truth. He cursed, his gaze trailing over the tartan and the bed, destroyed with their lovemaking.
What have I done? He whispered.
She stood at the shaming, stinging words, refusing to allow them to slay her. There is no need for you to marry me, she said, trying for calm, for cool, trying to show strength even as the words made her weak. His brows knit together, the angles of his face sharp in the shadows, and for the first time since he'd broken down her door, she saw the beast in him, wild and frustrated. He replied, but it seemed as though she had not spoken.
We marry. It is the only choice.
In her dreams, she had imagined this moment, Alec proposing marriage. But in those dreams, he proposed from passion, from love, never from duty, and certainly never with regret. Marriage to Alec Stewart, Duke of Warnick, might have been Lily's greatest desire, but she did not want it like this. She had given him all she had, her love, and it was not enough for him. And so she gave him the only other thing she could, his freedom. You forget, Your Grace, that you cannot force me into marriage. His eyes went wide with recognition as she invoked the most important clause in her guardianship agreement.
Lily,
he said, warning in the word. She turned toward the door, unable to meet his gaze any longer. I shan't marry a man who regrets me. I may not deserve better, but I owe myself that. She did not expect him to reply, and she certainly did not expect him to reply with such anger.
God damn it, Lily, he thundered, deep and low and thick with brogue.
She turned back to find the muscles of his broad, bare chest rippling with barely contained fury.
You think I would be the one who regrets? You think it would be me who is shamed?
I do, she said, the words coming on a wave of confusion. Of course it would be. Marrying lovely Lily, the ruined Miss Muse. What worse a choice for a duke? He came toward her, and she thought he might take her in hand before he stopped short, crossing his arms across his magnificent broad chest.
Lily,
he said, the words no longer angry, now exhausted, resigned.
I promise you, I would not regret you for a moment. You, on the other hand, you would regret every minute we've ever shared.
Impossible. I would never regret it. She stopped. Alec, what I said. I love you. He turned away from her, reaching for his coat.
I shall take you home.
This is my home. Wherever you are is home. Tears threatened, and she resisted the words, instead settling on a single question. Why? For a moment she thought he might answer, his throat working, his gaze the only thing in the room. She willed him to answer, to reveal whatever demons loomed for him. When he spoke, it was not a reply, but a declaration.
Not me, another, someone worthy.
And then he said,
We shall find the painting, and we shall set you free.
Chapter 18. Something wicked indeed. Scottish brute spied at Scottish play. England shall be your ruin. As a child, Alec had heard the words dozens of times, hundreds of them. Every time he had begged his father to send him to England, to follow his mother, to honour her, to find the place she loved, a world that had promised more for her than the Scottish borderlands ever could.
England shall be your ruin, the old man would say, just as it was mine.
And now it was true. Like his father, he loved an Englishwoman of whom he was unworthy. Unlike his father, he was willing to do anything to save her from a future replete with disappointment. I love you. He should never have made her say it, should never have allowed himself to bask in it. But even now, those words rioted through him, making him ache. It would make everything to come that much more difficult, knowing that she would stay with him if he asked, that she would lower herself to be with him. He had one way of protecting her from that life. One final chance that would give her the life of which she dreamed. And so he stood alone in the largest box at the Hawkins Theatre. Belonging to Mr. and Mrs. Duncan West, the newspaper magnate and his legendary aristocratic wife, waiting for the show to begin. He wore a coat and trousers that ostensibly fit him, but nevertheless felt as though they would strangle him, slowly, throughout the evening.
You look terrifying, King said as he stepped through the curtain and into the box, his charming wife on his arm.
Alec bowed low over the Marchioness's hand before standing straight and saying,
My lady, I am ever amazed by your patience and tolerance with such a fully tactless husband.
Sophie laughed at the words. It is a great trial, as you can imagine, Your Grace. She paused. For what it is worth, I do not think you terrifying in the least. I think you quite dashing.
Not as dashing as I, though, correct, her husband interjected.
She made a show of rolling her eyes, even as King pulled her tight to his side, colour high on her cheeks as he pressed a kiss to her temple. The poor Marquis of Eversley, ever maligned by the world around him. King's kiss moved adoringly to her bare shoulder, in a display of affection that no doubt scandalized women peering through opera glasses throughout the theatre.
I'm terribly wounded, love. You shall have to do something to make it all better later this evening.
Alec attempted not to hear the Marchioness's sharp intake of breath at the caress, before King turned to him and said,
Dashing indeed, Warnick. I see you saw my tailor. I did, he said,
deliberately turning from the couple to survey the floor of the hall.
For the theatre? King asked,
innocently enough for Alec to know that danger approached.
Or for something else entirely?
King, his wife warned softly.
It's a reasonable question. One hears things about beautiful wards and their taciturn guardians.
Alec cut him a look.
Why would I dress for her? Why, indeed, King said,
and Alec resisted the urge to wipe the smug look off his friend's face.
The goal is to get her married to another.
Not entirely any longer. He didn't want her married. He wanted her free. He wanted her with a world of choices spread out before her. He wanted to give her the future she wished, whatever it might be. I love you. Whatever it might be, beyond him.
I understand the stated goal, King said. I simply don't understand its inception.
Alec's gaze narrowed on his friend.
What is that to mean? Only that I do not understand forcing the girl to woo another, when she has a possibility so very close at hand.
King, the Marchioness said again. King turned to his wife.
Look at him. I haven't seen Alec Stewart in a properly fitting English suit since school. It's obvious for whom he dresses, so why not marry the...
He trailed off, and Alec gritted his teeth. No, don't see it. Understanding flared in King's gaze.
You won't marry her. I will not.
Pity chased understanding away, and Alec wanted to leap from the balcony to save himself from King's approach. From his soft words, unable to be heard by any but the two of them.
Alec, he said. School was a long time ago. I know that, Alec replied curtly. Do you, though?
King paused.
You are a different man. A man, full stop. She would have you, all of you. She would be lucky to.
Alec moved, stopping the words on his friend's lips.
Don't you dare. Don't even suggest that she is the one who would be lucky in such a scenario.
King's eyes went wide, and his voice grew louder.
You're a duke. She's the scandalous daughter of a...
Alec's gaze narrowed.
Call her scandalous one more time.
His friend was intelligent enough to remain silent.
I am barely a duke. I was 17th in line, like the setup to a goddamn farce, and so far beneath her it is obscene.
He looked away.
It does not matter. I am not her future.
He had a chance to have her unruined, a chance for her to remain without him, to survive however she liked, to not regret, and he intended to take that chance and leave her with a better man than he could ever be. He knew that in most circumstances the most noble act would be to marry her, but in his case nobility came with making a place for Lily to be happy and well provided for with a better man, one without shame behind him. The previous evening had been a disastrous mistake. He was racked with guilt over his inability to resist her, to ruin her again with his body and his past, and his desire. Guilt, not regret. He would never regret touching her, and that would be his punishment. A vision flashed. Lily, barely clothed, surrounded by the proof of his coarseness. The broken bed, the canopy in shambles, the porcelain figurines smashed to the ground. She remained perfection incarnate, a goddess among ruins, the ruins of his hand, of his touch. In that keen awareness, he could not help but tell her the truth.
You will regret me.
But she would not regret what he did for her. Of that he was certain. And so he was here tonight in a supremely uncomfortable suit, waiting for the rest of London to arrive so he might commit a crime and give the woman he loved the life she deserved. The curtain moved, and West entered, his high-born wife on his arm, the two looking like royalty. And they were in this new age, where the news could elevate or destroy, and the ground shifted beneath the feet of the aristocracy. In a matter of years, women would survive Lily's scandal, as long as the news was on their side. The world would see the truth of her, that she was glorious and worthy only of their adoration. Not so now, however. Now, he required West for more than the papers. The other man met his gaze, nodding a greeting from across the box so that he could dispense with the formality when he reached Alec, his wife firmly on his arm. The lady's presence made it impossible for Alec to do the same. He bowed, greeting her with the title to which she was entitled, despite her marrying a commoner.
Lady Georgiana.
She smiled, broad and beautiful. Your Grace, she said, setting her hand in his with a curtsy that would put a duchess to shame. I do not use the title. I am Mrs. West. She turned to her husband. Proud beyond measure to be so. The love in the words was unmistakable, and Alec found himself, for the first time in a long while, believing in the emotion here, surrounded by couples who seemed to have touched it despite its ephemera.
Perhaps the box would bless Lily. Bring her the love of which she'd once dreamed.
The thought ached, even as he forced himself to complete it. Pushing aside the knot in his throat, he looked to West.
Tell me you have it.
West reached into the pocket of his topcoat and extracted a sheaf of paper.
That you must ask is an insult of the highest caliber. I should call you out. I would choose broadswords, and you would not enjoy the outcome, Alec said, taking the paper. Christ, West said. The Scots really are a prehistoric people.
I rather like the idea of broadswords, Mrs. West said dryly. I should like to see you with one, husband. He turned to her, his voice going low and dark.
It can be arranged.
Alec rolled his eyes and opened the document, not caring that the rest of London watched. He stared at the map for a long moment, committing it to memory, before depositing it into his own pocket.
I shan't ask you how you procured it, but I am grateful for it.
West's gaze lingered on his wife.
I have excellent connections, ones that extend far beyond my reach.
He returned his attention to Alec.
And there is another thing you should know. Hawkins is evicted from his home in Covent Garden. If gossip is to be believed, he is bedding down here.
Alec nodded once.
As the home is emptied of its contents, I am unsurprised.
One of West's golden brows rose.
And how do you know it is empty?
Would you believe connections beyond my reach?
No.
He paused.
But if those connections were worth their salt, they would tell you to offer to buy the painting tomorrow if you cannot steal it tonight.
Alarmed by the frankness of the newspaperman's words, Alec's gaze flickered to West's wife, who he knew was on the selection committee of the Royal Academy. The lady inclined her head.
As far as I am concerned, you play the role of Robin Hood here, Your Grace. If I had my way, the thing would have been banned from exhibition the moment Miss Hargrove was made mockery.
Alec bowed again.
My lady.
Turning to West, he added.
Thank you.
With their mutual support, he was prepared to do whatever he could to get the painting. Now, all that was left was for Hawkins to take the stage so he could destroy the man and win Lily's future. As though he had summoned her with the thought, she entered the box on the arm of Lord Stanhope, who had collected her from Berkeley Square, where Alec had deposited her the evening before, after they'd destroyed both his sanity and the home of Duke and Duchess No. 9. Lily had begged him to let her stay, and he turned her away, praying that her anger would consume the other, more dangerous emotion that tempted him so thoroughly. He was rather proud of himself, honestly, for orchestrating this particular scenario, as sending her away was, perhaps, the most difficult thing he had ever done. Lady Cecily Talbot trailed behind them, a perfect chaperone, considering her sister and brother-in-law stood mere feet away. If one was willing to ignore the fact that Cecily Talbot had taught Lily to escape a home from the third floor, and also to wonder what was beneath the man's kilt. Not that he had not enjoyed her discovery immensely. He cleared his throat, shifting his weight, and longing for the concealing folds of his plaid. No, Cecily was the best available choice, as viable chaperones for Lily were somewhat thin on the ground, and he had learned his lesson at Hyde Park. Lily laughed up at the Earl as they entered, and though she was obscured from view, Alec was instantly drawn to the sound, to her glittering eyes, to the wide open smile she offered the gentleman. Memory flashed from the preceding night, a keen reminder of what it had been to hold her in his arms as she laughed without hesitation, free and honest, like breath. Alec's hands fisted at his side, itching to lay the perfect Earl low. And then Lily was looking at him, and he was the one laid low. She stopped laughing instantly, unable to keep her emotions from her gaze. He identified them immediately. Disappointment, betrayal, anger, and behind it, shame. What in hell was she ashamed of? He could not ask her, despite a keen desire to do so. Stanhope released her to greet the others in the box, and Lady Cecily put a hand to Lily's shoulder, drawing her attention. Leaning in, the other woman whispered something, and Lily straightened beneath the words, calm settling over her. Alec made a mental note to destroy any man who disparaged Cecily Talbot ever again, for she played marvellous sentry for Lily, when he was too weak to do it himself. The Marchioness of Eversley and Mrs. West extricated themselves from their husband's dotage to greet Lily, and gratitude flooded Alec, the two aristocratic ladies lending the full force of their combined power to Lily's reputation. With their support, she would survive the gossip that would linger after he found the painting and destroyed it. The ladies moved, clearing a path and indicating Lily should take a seat at the front of the box, in front of all London, bold and proud and unafraid of being seen in Hawkins Theatre. It was then that he saw her for the first time, head to toe, saw what it was she wore. The air was suddenly gone from the room. The dress was the most stunning blue he'd ever seen, silk and perfectly suited to her, with a low neck that made him want to blindfold every man in the room and press wild, lingering kisses along the expanse of skin it revealed. But it was not the dress that destroyed him. It was the sash, tied tight around her waist, falling to the floor in a wide red swath. It was his plaid. Again. It should not have moved him. After all, had he not seen her wrapped in the tartan the night before, alone and nude on his bed? Had that not been the worst of all prospects, the one most likely to shred his patience and his nobility?
How was it possible this was infinitely worse? The evening prior had felt like a gift. Tonight felt like a declaration of war, like an invasion, a claiming. As though she stood in front of all London and claimed Scotland for her own, claimed him for her own, and he was expected to resist. As she approached, Alec found himself backing away until he came up against the edge of the balcony, and she said, low and without emotion, "Have a care, Your Grace, or you shall topple into the seats below." The prospect was not unpleasant when confronted with the alternative, facing her, looking like a queen.
"You wear my tartan."
She raised a brow. "Is it yours? I did not notice."
"Bollocks."
He wanted to pull her to him and kiss her senseless at the lie. Instead, he narrowed his gaze and lowered his voice to a whisper.
"What is this game you play, Lily?"
She tilted her head and matched his volume. "Nothing but the game you insist upon. We neither of us are very good at truth, are we?" Ironically, he replied with it.
"No, we are not."
She nodded, her lips pressing into a thin line. "The item you seek?"
"I am told it is here."
"And what am I to do whilst you play the role of swashbuckling hero?" He wanted it to be true, but the role was not for him.
"Not hero," he said. "Guardian."
"Ah, yes. My hero is to be another."
"No, never."
He was saved from answering by the dimming of the lights, footmen around the theatre dousing candles, marking the start of the performance, and summoning Stanhope, who placed a hand at Lily's elbow, making Alec want to commit murder.
"Shall we sit, Miss Hargrove?"
If a duke killed an earl, did the hierarchy of the aristocracy come into play? Did it matter? Newgate seemed a reasonable sacrifice for destroying a man who touched Lily while she wore the Stuart plaid. Luckily for Stanhope, Cecily approached Alec. "Your Grace, it seems you are landed with me, as we are surrounded by turtle doves." It took a moment for him to find his tongue.
"It is my pleasure, my lady."
She raised a brow. "Obviously." They sat, and Cecily leaned in. "The wolves watch her, Duke. I suggest you refrain from making it any harder than it already is."
"I don't know what you mean."
"I think you know precisely what I mean. They do not watch the stage. They watch her." He did not look at Lady Cecily, too focused on the back of Lily's head, on the curl of her hair, on the line of her neck. He inhaled, meaning to calm his rioting emotions, but instead catching her scent, Scotland and sanity. He looked across the theatre, desperate for something other than Lily, and found the whole world watching them, opera glasses trained on the box. On lovely Lily, once Derek Hawkins' muse, now his disgraced mistress, surrounded by champions who are not enough, who would not be enough if Alec did not succeed in his task. "He knows his role," Cecily said quietly, returning Alec's attention to the Earl, seated in front of him. Stanhope leaned in as the box darkened and the curtain opened, whispering in Lily's ear, making her laugh. Playing her saviour in front of her judge and jury, the role Alec would have done anything to play.
"I cannot."
The words came unbidden, unwelcome, and he stopped them before they betrayed too much. Unfortunately, Cecily Talbot saw everything. "Then you should not be here," she whispered. "If you are unable to be the man she requires, then it is only fair that you remove yourself from the playing field." His hands fisted on his thighs.
"You overstep yourself, Lady Cecily."
"It would not be the first time," she said. "But what sort of friend would I be if I did not name you for the coward you are?" If she were a man, he would call her out. But she was a woman, and so he was forced to acknowledge that she was right. Far below, Hawkins took the stage, and the theatre erupted into applause. The bastard preened beneath the accolade before he spoke his first line.
"So foul and fair a day I have not seen."
Alec was out of the box like a shot. He'd left her again. She stared blindly at the stage as the man with whom she'd once imagined herself in love wooed all of London with a magnificent performance. Not that she noticed a bit of it. She was too busy seething. How dare he leave her again? How dare he make her feel as he had the night before, make her confess her love, make her love him all the more, and then summon her here tonight on the arm of another, and then leave her? I love you. How many times had she said it? How many times had he demanded it from her? And then he'd spoken his words, full of regret and shame, words that had echoed through her since he'd deposited her like an unwanted parcel on the steps of the Berkeley Square house.
We shall find the painting, and we shall set you free.
And tonight he passed her off to another man, infinitely better, infinitely kinder, as he sat beside her before London, in front of the instrument of her ruin, and somehow infinitely less. Why did he not want her for himself? He'd made his pretty promises last evening, rendered her breathless with his powerful words, vowing desire and desperation. Made love to her as though she was the only woman in the world and he the only man. And then he'd refused her, regretted her. Why? And worse, why did Lily want him just the same? Love was a hateful, horrible thing, somehow made worse in the darkness of this damn theatre, this place that had brought her nothing but shame, shame she would gladly wear if she could have Alec along with it. But she couldn't have him. Even as he offered her choice, he refused her the only choice she wished to make. And so she would take the rest of what he offered. Freedom. She stood, turning for the back of the box. Cecily met her gaze, understanding, and raised a brow. Lily did not pause, making her way through the box blindly, not caring who saw, not caring who knew where she was going. Caring only about finding him and telling him precisely how much she loathed him. She pushed through the thick curtains and into the brightly lit hallway beyond, empty of people, all of whom were no doubt watching Derek, odious and compelling in equal measures. There was no sign of Alec, which meant he was already headed into the bowels of the playhouse, searching for the painting. Her heart began to pound at the thought of him setting eyes upon it. Somehow the idea of his finding it, touching it, claiming it, was worse than the idea of all of London seeing it. She headed for the back stairwell, the one that twisted down to the wing of the stage, resolved to be there when he found it, to claim it before he could.
Miss Hargrove!
The words stopped her, and she turned back to find Lord Stanhope at the entrance to the West Box. My lord, she began, not knowing what to say. He found the words for her, approaching.
Take care.
Cecily entered the hallway as well, hanging back when Stanhope looked over her shoulder. Do not mind me, my lord. In this play I am merely the unskilled chaperone. Imagine me in need of spectacles and terribly hard of hearing. Lily could not help but smile at her friend. Stanhope approached again, his own smile near blinding.
You are lucky to have such friends, Miss Hargrove.
I am, my lord. She hesitated, then added. It is something of a new experience for me, as is having such a kind gentleman who sides with me.
I think you would not find me kind if you knew me long.
She wondered at the words from this man who seemed so very perfect. You are wrong, she said. You forget I've had my share of unkind men, and you are not one. I would wager well that you are good.
Heiress chasing is not the most honourable of activities.
I hope you will chase more worthy ones in the future, my lord. He shrugged one shoulder, a lock of hair falling over his brow, making him look effortlessly charming.
It shall be terribly boring, don't you think? I find I enjoy playing the part of the other gentleman.
You should not be the other, you know. You should be the gentleman.
And would you have me, Miss Hargrove, as gentleman?
She would be lucky to have him. And yet... No, my lord, I would not saddle you with my scandal.
And if I would have it, if I would bear it?
She smiled. Then you most certainly do not deserve it.
It has nothing to do with the scandal, though, does it? It has to do with the gentleman.
Tears threatened at the kind words. It does. I am afraid I have chosen poorly. He raised a brow.
You know, I think you are wrong. I think you have chosen the best gentleman of all.
She thought it too, but for some reason he would not have her.
You will regret it. You will regret me.
He was the best gentleman, if only he would see it. Thank you, my lord. And she was off, rushing down the stairs to her scandal, and to the man she would claim, if only he would allow it. Chapter 19. The Art of Warnick. It wasn't there. Alec stood at the centre of Derek Hawkins's offices, turning in a slow circle, seething in fury and frustration. The painting wasn't there. The rest of the empty studio from Covent Garden was there, lining the walls, six canvases deep, a collection of artwork that would make the docents of the British Museum squeal with excitement. It seemed that, in addition to being a superior bastard, Hawkins was, in fact, a superior talent, which meant Lily's portrait was as beautiful as they said, allegedly, as it was not there. What next? How would he save her? There was no time. He had 2 days to find the painting, 2 days before it was revealed to the world, and Lily had no choice but to marry him. And it wasn't there, goddammit! He resisted the urge to lower the candle to the nearest canvas and set the entire theatre ablaze. Hawkins would deserve it, for threatening her, for using her, for touching her. Alec cursed, long and wicked in the darkness. What does that mean? She spoke from the doorway. He hadn't heard the door open. He whirled to face her, the candle in his hand casting her face into flickering golden relief as she stepped inside and closed the door behind her.
You should be upstairs.
She approached, and he moved backward, until his trousers brushed against a large still life of pears, and he had no choice but to stop. She, however, did not stop. Why didn't she stop? Upstairs, she said, with Stanhope.
Yes.
Instead of down here, with you?
Yes.
Couldn't she see it? While you risk all to save me? Why didn't she understand? He would give up everything he had, everything he was, if it would keep her safe.
Yes.
A long silence stretched between them, muffled shouts from the stage beyond, somehow making the room seem smaller, more intimate. Alec wanted to climb the walls to escape it, to escape her. And somehow she seemed perfectly calm. It is not here, is it? He exhaled.
Nay.
I gathered as much when I heard you cursing. How was it that she was so calm? And so my demise approaches. She smirked, indicating the theatre beyond the door. Like Burnham Wood.
What have I told you about Shakespeare? He snapped.
She smiled. Last I heard, you were cursing him quite thoroughly.
It is my right as a Scot.
He tried not to look at her. She was so close now, close enough to smell, to touch, to ache for. And they were alone. She whispered his name like a sin. Alec, he swallowed.
Yes.
What does the curse mean? He shook his head.
It does not translate.
She waited for a long moment before he lifted his gaze to hers, her grey eyes silver in the candlelight. And what does mot créer mean? He shook his head.
It does not translate.
One side of her mouth rose in a little knowing smile.
Is it better or worse than the curse?
She was killing him. He was trying to be noble, to protect her, and... Why do you not want me, Alec?
He wanted her with every ounce of his being. How did she not see that?
He closed his eyes.
Lily, now is not the time.
What better time than this, she asked. What better time than now, on the eve of my destruction?
We've tomorrow to find it.
We shan't find it. That has never been our prophecy.
Stop referring to the damn play like it's relevant. Everyone dies at the end.
Not everyone. From the ash comes a line of kings. She paused, then said quietly. Scottish ones.
Cursed ones. There are no kings in Scotland now.
Aren't there? He ran a hand through his hair, frustration coursing through him, setting him aflame.
Get out, Lily. We've another day and I shall find the damn painting if I turn London inside out. Go to Stanhope and see if he might be your happiness.
He shan't be, she said.
You don't know that.
I do, though, she said. How could one man make me happy when I love another so well? He turned for the door.
You know not of what you speak.
They had to leave this place before they were caught, and he had to find air. She'd thieved it from the room with her beauty, like a fairy. And now hear him, thinking Scott's madness like the damned king beyond. He'd reached the door when she spoke. I know you are a coward. He looked back at the words to find her unmoved from her place at the centre of the room, surrounded by the work of the man who had ruined her. Straight and strong and proud as Boadicea, and wearing his plaid like a banner. She was perfect.